Today we'd like to see the title of Jonathan and David in the 1 Samuel chapter 20 and 21. To the souls on this online world through podcast or YouTube channel on the earth. In chapter 20 verse 3, then David took an oath again and said, "Your father certainly knows that I have found favor in your eyes. And he has said, do not let Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved. But truly, as the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, there is but a step between me and death." What does it mean, and what can we learn from here? Question 2, in chapter 20, verse 15, "But you shall not cut off your kindness from my house forever, no, not when the Lord has cut off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." What does it mean in the context, and how can you apply it to our lives? Last question, in chapter 21, verse 6, "So the priest gave him holy bread, for there was no bread there, but the sure bread which had been taken from before the Lord, in order to put hot bread in its place on the day when it was taken away." What does it mean in the context, and how can you apply it to our lives? In the last time, 1 Samuel chapter 19, verse 24, "And he also stripped off his clothes and prophesied before Samuel in like manner, and lay down naked all that day and all that night. Therefore they say, is Saul also among the prophets?" God's powerful protection consistently shielded David from Saul's murderous intent. Despite Saul repeatedly sending messengers and eventually coming himself, the Supreme God incapacitated them all, causing them to prophesy and become helpless to harm David. This divine intervention, however, highlights a crucial point. Even after witness God's clear deliverance, David, in a lapse of faith and trust, still chose his own methods to escape from Saul into Ramath without the prayer and request. This pattern underscores a common human tendency to quickly forget God's promise and past deliverances, turning to human solutions in times of trouble or despair. Notably, in both this instance and an earlier one in 1 Samuel chapter 10, Saul, though far from God's heart, was compelled to speak God's words, prophesy under the spiritual power, demonstrating God's sovereign control even over those opposing his will. Chapter 20, then David fled from Naioth in Ramah and went and said to Jonathan, "What have I done? What is my iniquity, and what is my sin before your father, that he seeks my life?" So Jonathan said to him, "By no means, you shall not die. Indeed, my father will do nothing, either great or small, without first telling me. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so." Then David took an oath again and said, "Your father certainly knows that I have found a favor in your eyes, that he has said, do not let Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved. But truly, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, there is but a step between me and death." This passage reflects on the spiritual discipline of living with an awareness of mortality and the imminence of the divine This consciousness illustrated by David's realization of his own fragility and the New Testament expectation of Christ's return served as a moral and ethical compass. By acknowledging that life exists on the border of eternity, the believer is motivated to maintain a state of purifying hope. This perspective does not instill fear, but rather encourages discipline and a bright life. The uncertainty of the timing ensures that one's current actions remain consistent, aligned with their ultimate values of eternity. So cross-reference 1 John chapter 3, verse 23 there. Verse 4. So Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you yourself desire, I will do it for you." And David said to Jonathan, "Indeed, tomorrow is the new moon, and I should not fail to sit with the king to eat. But let me go, that I may hide in the field until the third day at the evening. If your father misses me at all, then say David earnestly asked permission of me, that he might run over to Bethlehem, his city, for there is a yearly sacrifice there for all the family. If he says this, it is well, your servant will be safe. But if he is very angry, be sure that evil is determined by him." Verse 5, monthly the Israelites observed the new moon festival to worship God as the creator. Verse 8, "Therefore you shall deal kindly with your servant, for you have brought your servant into covenant the Lord with you. Nevertheless, if there is iniquity in me, kill me yourself. For why should you bring me to your father?" But Jonathan said, "Far be it from you. For if I knew certainty that evil was determined by my father to come upon you, then would I not tell you?" Then David said to Jonathan, "Who will tell me? Or what if your father answers you wrathfully?" And Jonathan said to David, "Come, let us go out into the field." So both of them went out into the field. Then Jonathan said to David, "The Lord God of Israel is witness. When I have sounded out my father sometime tomorrow, or the third day, and indeed there is good towards David, and I do not send to you and tell you, may the Lord do so, and much more to Jonathan. But it pleases my father to do you evil, then I will report it to you and send you away, that you may go in safety. And the Lord be with you, as he has been with my father. And you shall not only show me the kindness of the Lord while I still live, that I may not die, but you shall not cut off your kindness from my house forever, nor not when the Lord has cut off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." Recognizing David's future as the king of Israel, Jonathan established a formal covenant to ensure the safety and kind treatment of his descendants. This proactive agreement was rooted in Jonathan's acceptance of David's divine appointment and the desire to preserve his family line. David later fulfilled this obligation by bringing Jonathan's son Mephibosheth into royal palace to live as a member of his own household. They're honoring the covenant through tangible provision and protection. Verse 16, "So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, let the Lord quiet at the hand of David's enemies. Now Jonathan again caused David to vow, because he loved him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. Then Jonathan said to David, tomorrow is the new moon, and you will be missed, because your seat will be empty. And when you have stayed through the age, go down quickly and come to place where you hid on the days of deep, and remain by the stone of Ezel. Then I would shoot 3 arrows to the side as though I shot at the target. And there I will send a lad, saying, go find the arrows. If I expressly say to the lad, look, the arrows are on this side of you, get them and come. Then as the Lord lives, there is safety for you, no harm. But if I say this to young man, look, the arrows are behind you, go your way, for the Lord has sent you away. And as for the matter which you and I have spoken of, indeed, the Lord be between you and me forever. Then David hid in the field, and when the new moon had come, the king sat down to eat the feast. Now the king sat on his seat, and at other times on a seat by the wall. And Jonathan rose, and Abner sat by Saul's side, but David's place was empty. Nevertheless, Saul did not say anything that day, for he thought something had happened to him. He's unclean, surely he's unclean. And it happened the next day, the second day of the month, David's place was empty. And Saul said to Jonathan his son, why has the son of Jesse not come to yet, either yesterday or today? So Jonathan answered Saul, David earnestly asked the permission of me to go to Bethlehem. And he said, please let me go, for our family has sacrificed in the city, and my brother has commanded me to be there. And now, if I have found a favor in your eyes, please let me get away and see my brothers. Therefore, he has not come to the king's table. 26. The Mosaic law mandated ritual cleansing during the new moon festival, Numbers 28:11-15, to serve an external symbol of worshipper's internal desire for spiritual purity and the right relationship with God. In the New Testament context, this physical ritual superseded by spiritual reality. Hearts are purified through faith in the sacrifice and death of Jesus Christ. This ongoing sanctification is further maintained through active reading of and commitment to God's Word, which is serving to set the believer in truth. Verse 3, then Saul's anger was aroused against Jonathan and said to him, you son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother of nakedness? 31, for as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, you shall not be established nor your kingdom. Now therefore send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die. 32, and Jonathan answered Saul his father and said to him, why should he be killed? What has he done? 31, despite the divine decrees that his dynasty would end, 1 Samuel chapter 13, Saul attempted to secure his throne by positioning his son Jonathan as his successor. However, Jonathan voluntarily relinquished his claim to the throne out of a superior devotion to God's will and his covenantal love for David. This act illustrates the fundamental principle of discipleship later echoed in the New Testament. Genuine love for God must supersede allegiance to self and family, requiring the subordination of personal ambition to divine purposes. 33. Then Saul cast a spear at him to kill him, by which Jonathan knew that it was determined by his father to kill David. So Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger and ate no fruit the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David, because his father had treated him shamefully. And so it was in the morning that Jonathan went out in the field at the time appointed with David, and a little lad was with him. Then he said to his lad, "Now run, find the arrows which I shoot." As the lad ran, he shot an arrow behind them, and the lad had come to the place where the arrow was which Jonathan had shot. Jonathan cried out after the lad and said, "Is not the arrow behind you?" And Jonathan cried out after the lad, "Make haste, hurry, do not delay." So Jonathan's lad gathered up the arrows and came back to his master. But the lad did not know anything, only Jonathan and David knew of the matter. Then Jonathan gave his weapons to his lad and said to him, "Go carry them to the city." As soon as the lad had gone, David rose from a place towards the south, fell on his face to the ground, and bowed down three times, and they kissed one another, and they wept together, but David more so. The final encounter between David and Jonathan marks the emotional and definite conclusion of their companionship. Their shared weeping signifies the profound personal cost of their loyalty to God's plan, which necessitated a permanent separation. Despite the grief of their parting, the moment serves as a final seal on their covenant, demonstrating that their spiritual bond remained intact, even as their paths diverged. David toward his destiny as a king, and Jonathan toward his commitment to his family and his eventual death. 42, then Jonathan said to David, "Go in peace, since we have both sworn in the name of the Lord, saying, 'May the Lord be between you and me, between your descendants and my descendants forever.'" So he rose, departed, and Jonathan went into the city. This final meeting between David and Jonathan was their last encounter, marked by intense display of pathos and shared grief. Their mutual weeping highlighted the profound emotional weight of a friendship, severed by political circumstances and social hostility. Although their paths were forced apart, this moment solidified the depths of their bond, showing that while they were physically separated, their covenant loyalty remained unshaken until death. Chapter 21. Now David came to Nob, to Abimelech the priest, and Abimelech was afraid when he met David and said to him, "Why are you alone and no one is with you?" So David said to Abimelech the priest, "The king has ordered me on some businesses," and said to him, "Do not let anyone know anything about the business on which I send you, or what I have commanded you, and I have directed my young man to such and such a place." Although David attempted to justify his deception as a white lie to escape the Saul's pursuit, the moral consequence, divine moral consequence, was catastrophic and scripturally indispensable. Under the Mosaic law, lying is strictly prohibited, and David's lack of transparency with the priest Ahimelech directly triggered a chain of events that led to the massacre of 85 priests by Doeg the Edomite. The next chapter is. This passage illustrates that even for a man after God's own heart, a lapse in integrity can have devastating unintended consequences, proving that ethical compromise, even for self-preservation, is never truly justified in the sight of God. Verse 3, "Now therefore, whatever you on hand, give me 5 loaves of bread in my hand, or whatever it can be found." And the priest answered David and said, "There is no common bread on hand, but there is holy bread. If the young man have at least kept themselves from women, Then David answered the priest, said to him, "Truly, women have been kept from us about 3 days since I came out, and the vessels of a young man are holy, and the bread is in effect common, even though it was consecrated in the vessels this day." Because the man had maintained his ceremonial purity by refraining from sexual intercourse during their journey, the priest determined they met the basic requirement for holiness. Consequently, in the act of hunger and necessity, the priest permitted David and his men to consume the consecrated bread, which is normally preserved for the priesthood. This decision prior to the immediate preservation of life of the strict ritual latter provided that the physical and ceremonial conditions for sanctify were satisfied. Verse 6. So the priest gave him the holy bread, for there was no bread there, but the show bread, so 12 bread, which had been taken from before the Lord in order to put hot bread in its place on the day when it was taken away. By providing consecrated bread to David and his men, Abimelech the priest demonstrated that the divine moral obligation, love for neighbor, supersedes the strict ritual adherence in case of urgent physical necessity. Although the law typically reserved this bread exclusively for priesthood, the preservation of human life took a precedence of a ceremonial protocol. Jesus later called this special historical event to silence his critics. Verse 7. Now a certain man of the servant of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord, and his name was Doeg, an Edomite, the chief of the herdsmen who belonged to Saul. And David said to Ahimelech, "Is there not here on hand a spear or a sword? For I have brought neither my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste." So the priest said, "The sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah, there it is, wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you will take that, take it. If there is no other except that one here." The ephod was a sacred vestment worn by the Israelite priesthood, serving both the ritualistic and functional role in divine service, 1 Samuel chapter 18. Interestingly, David appeared unaware that Goliath's sword was being stored at sanctuary in Noab. His lack of knowledge likely stemmed from the significant passage of time since his victory over the giants. Having been a young man at the time of the battle, David had transitioned through the years of service in Saul's court and subsequent flight, distancing him from the specific location where his former trophy had been consecrated and preserved. So chapter 2:18. Verse 10, then David arose and fled that day from before Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath. And the servant of Achish said to him, "Is this not David, the king of the land? Did they not sing of him to one another in dances, saying, 'Saul has slain his thousands, David his 10,000s. Now David took those words to heart and was very much afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. The biblical principle that the fear of a man brings a snare is vividly illustrated by David's lapse in faith while seeking refuge with Achish, the king of Gath, driven by a deliberating fear of a Philistine leader. David, the divinely anointed future king, resorted to a humiliating ruse, fainting insanely by scratching at walls, letting saliva run down his breath. This behavior demonstrates how the fear of human authority can degrade a noble character into that of a fool. However, Psalm 34, the heading is noticed. Psalm of David, when he pretended madness before Abimelech, who drove him away, he departed. Abimelech is the title for the king, whose name was likely Achish. So, last verse 13 up to 15. So he changed his behavior before them, pretended madness in their hands, scratched on the doors of the gate, let his saliva fall down on his brow. Then Achish said to his servant, "Look, you see, the man is insane. Why have you brought him to me? Have I need of a madman that you have brought this fellow to play madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house?" In a calculated act of self-preservation, David feigned insanity before the Philistine king to exploit her cultural taboo against harming the mentally unstable. This ancient social custom allowed David to escape a life-threatening situation, much as a modern legal concept of an insanity defense can mitigate the criminal liability in the United States judicial system. However, David's temporary display of weakness stood in the stark contrast to his established reputation as a formidable warrior. He had previously slain thousands of Philistines, making his survival through such a humiliating ruse both a strategic necessity and a profound moments of personal desperation. So, we covered all three questions, continue to keep on praying for his mission effort, especially the Vietnam. As new believers, to give encouraging, continue to keep on share gospel to other people. Also, as of this year's prayer house is available at any daytime. So that is good news. That is location. It's Royal Memorial Park, Gate 10. May God bless you. Let's sing all together. Brochure Maranatha song.